This is the Chris Abraham Show.
I'm recording this afterwards. This is Chris Abraham, the Chris Abraham Show, Season 5, Episode 8. And the title of the show is the contradiction between humanitarianism and climatism, and the different goals between humanitarians and climatologists, or people who believe that we need to work hard as humans to abate or mitigate or reverse human-created climate change and global warming. Are they at odds with people who are trying to allow anybody born into the world to live a happy, empowered, healthy, long, successful, well-fed, non-diseased life with their own culture, their own agency, their own integrity and pride? Are those two things at odds? And if there is a Venn diagram overlap, what is that? We all know that a large percentage of people in the world would not be alive without the aggressive intervention and mitigation from science, technology, medicine, and services, right? The technological innovation of food, distribution centers, etc. So I'm going to go into that in the next segment. And the reason why I actually did this reintroduction is because I am so embarrassed that I forgot that Muslims worship at a mosque. So I was like, temple? No. Church? It's not a Muslim church. No. Jews, they worship at temple. It's mosques. So when I'm like, comment dire, qu'est-ce que c'est le mot? Je ne sais pas bleu. It's, the word is mosque. Anyway, enjoy, and sorry about this. As you know, I am anti-professionalism. Right now, I'm hunkered over at the community table in a very loud and boisterous Starbucks. I'm not at Idito's yet, but I needed to spread out and get some work done. So sometimes on the weekend, Idito's is chock-a-block with weekend warriors. And I want that place to thrive, so I don't want a big, fat Chris Abraham taking up a seat in my thriving Idito's. Anyway, don't forget the Chris Abraham Show, Season 5, Episode 8. Mahalo and aloha. This is Chris Abraham intervening again because I checked out. I'm putting this in before the bulk of the podcast, but I went in to ChatGPT and asked it, ChatGPT-4, and I asked it how many people would the Earth support were it not for modern innovations and charity and altruism and trade lines and load balancing and immigration and important medicine and strategies for chronic and fatal diseases such as organ failure, organ transplant, diabetes 1, diabetes 2, dialysis, and all these things. And ChatGPT wouldn't tell me, but when I went over to Google Bard, which I think is bard.google.com, it told me, hem haw, hem haw, hem haw, but likely the Earth would only be able to support 1 billion people. So that's the number that I put into the title, and I wanted to kind of put this in here now so that you could hear it before the rest of the episode. Thank you. Talk to you soon. Mahalo. Ciao. Hey there. I'm sure if you've been listening to me for a while, you've realized that most of my podcasts are broken up into chunks. Well, since I haven't been monetized for like 2 years, I've decided just to make it one long segment without cute little intermediary music breaks. So this is the Chris Abraham Show. My name's Chris Abraham. I might be developing an ear infection in my left ear, so tomorrow I will probably be going to the clinic. This is season 5, episode 8, I think, and it is a non-controversial topic. The title is Humanitarianism versus Climatism, and it will be about the fact that humanitarianism and climatism are at odds and are at contradictory movements, and I wonder how it is going to shake out in the end. I'll explain that now. Hello, this is Chris Abraham. I am sitting in Penrose Square. I am sharing space with lots of other people, so you might hear mirth in the background. You might hear city buses with diesel engines, like that one there. You might hear delivery trucks. You might hear fire engines. You might hear ambulances. You might hear garbage trucks. You might hear diesel 18-wheelers. And you might hear those giant construction dump trucks, like not the Tonka dump trucks, but the ones that have those giant beds that carry around refuse soil. I am just had my one breakfast today. I basically ate enough protein and fat to cover my entire calorie requirements for the day, so I will not eat any more. It is 10:36 on Sunday, April 16th. My bloody ear is bothering me. I hope it heals on its own, but we all know that those kinds of things do not heal on their own. So I'm probably going to need antibiotic eardrops. Bloody hell. All right, so we have, 8 million people globally? And the only reason we have 8 million people globally is because the quality of life standards and all the breaks towards overpopulation have been solved through technology and load balancing generosity across the globe, right? There are huge number of people who are developing, and you know, you can develop medicines all you want, but if you do not provide vaccines, if you don't provide mitigations, if you don't provide antibiotics, if you don't provide hydration, if you don't provide various and sundry anti-malaria medicines and so forth, netting, etc., natural processes of destroying and breaking
and collapsing populations would have naturally occurred, which might well have easily at least plateaued the world's population. So, without human health technologies at an ever fast at a faster rate, there quite possibly would have been incredibly higher numbers of childhood and pregnancy deaths. There would have been fatalities. There would have been way more people dying from easily fixable diseases. And even in America, the universal vaccination and all these other things. This is what I call the humanitarian mission. And the humanitarian mission is incredibly noble. We're keeping more people alive who would quickly die to the normal slings and arrows of living in the world were it not for the constant, persistent, and rich injection of technology, medicine, support, food, and water, clean water. So, and I'm saying that for Americans and Western people too. People with diabetes would die. People who, without universal free dialysis in many of the world's countries, with universal free dialysis, so many people would die. Without cancer treatment, people would die. Dying is a persistent issue. And were it not for global humanitarian, altruistic, and even GASP faith-based missions, there would be probably, I don't know what the number is, I will ask GPT what the population of the Earth would be if it did not have modern, not only just modern medicine and technology, but supply chains, donations, altruisms, support, missions, ministry, Doctors Without Borders, cleft palate missions, missions from the Gates Foundation to try to prevent COVID and waterborne and mosquito-borne illnesses. I bet you, I don't reckon to say what it is, but I reckon that maybe we would have a population of 5 to 6 billion people globally. It would be, sadly, it would be probably skewed towards the first world and the second world, maybe. But, I mean, nobody's ever stopped people from having babies, right? So I would say that probably people might, like the argument amongst humanitarians is that the empowerment of women, the provision for women's health care, such as abortions and things like, you know, condoms and the pill and so forth, prophylaxis, make it easier for women to avoid having as many kids, and the humanitarian efforts for keeping the birth rate higher from successful births and not childbirth deaths, higher incidence of, what is it, they call it birth deaths or infant mortality. That's right, infant mortality. The increasing tendency for children to come of age without dying means that many agrarian peoples tend to go for just an heir as opposed to an heir and a spare and a spare and a spare and a spare and a spare. Like the way nomadic people would make sure that they had enough people to survive the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune is to make sure that you have 10 kids so you get to keep 4, right? That's that in many cases is the goal. Now, I guess, to be morose, one has 10 children, to hope that they survive childhood deaths from things like suicide and gun crimes. But that is too morose. So, Now you come to blows with climatology, right? You go ahead and humanely make sure the quality of life of every people equally across the board around the world, no matter how unable to sustain life sub-Saharan deserts might be, or deserts, or how cyclical famines and even political famines would naturally decimate millions of people. You fill in that vacuum and you supply all necessary resources, including refugees, supporting of the movement and the flying, shipping, boating, transporting of refugees to more sustainable areas. You create false populations, right? And now that comes into conflict with the idea that we're non-sustainable as a people. And while there is a tendency to, for the first world to want to actively hobble itself vis-a-vis Harrison Bergeron, where we start clamping down on our consumption in order to be able to load balance that consumption and give it, if you will, donate it abroad. That's not something that Americans are remotely keen to do, right? You need to make people do this, right? Like maybe Germany might be willing to do it. But the moment it becomes really painful and the moment it seems less like opt-in than opt-out, I guarantee you even the German people are going to start to grouse. As long as it makes you feel better about yourselves and your contribution to the world, that's fine. But the moment that you start having brownouts, blackouts, you don't have clean water, you don't have access to first world experiences like refrigerators, nice ranges, air conditioning, heating, warm water, hot water, all the water you want. The moment someone starts telling you you only have to, I mean, they're dealing with certain levels of that in California, right? People who are told that they can't water their lawn, they're told that they need to take 10-minute showers, no baths, so on and so forth. These are things that Americans balk at, right? So in the competition between humanitarianism and climatism, when does someone start to actively say, we need to shave off billions of people from this population growth in order to take the pressure off of people who have proven that they would more quickly go to their guns than go to their heartstrings and actively cede their first world perceived success and superiority past the point of virtue signaling? Like, when do, I'll just say this jokingly, when do World Economic Forum devotees Davos, when do devotees start giving up their Learjets, their Gulfstreams, their other PJs, as the rich people call them? When do they start giving up their 20,000 square foot air-conditioned houses? When do they give up their Olympic-sized pools with heating? When do they give up their floor heating? When do they give up all of those kinds of things? When do they give up heating their houses that they're not in? When do they give up their real cars and their real trucks and their real Escalades and the Escalades they roll with? I don't know. I mean, I don't think they will ever give that up, because they believe that their mission and ministry to save the world means that they are on higher orders. Just like when Jesus said, just let the woman give me the oil. There will always be the poor. This woman wants to give me expensive oils, and I, you know, rock these seamless garments. Come on, man. Give a Messiah a couple luxuries, bro. Like, I'm doing the best I can. Like, I'm sacrificing my life on your behalf. I feel like these Messiah complexes are something that are being shared by the client, climatologists, the climate scientists, and the same people who are trying to convince us that the world is going to have a climate collapse and a population collapse if we don't do this smoothly. Like, when is this going to foment a pandemic that has, you know, 20%, 30%, 50% Thanos level catastrophic repercussions? See, the bad thing about Thanos is that it killed 50% of everybody egalitarianly. I would say that Thanos is an egalitarian. He didn't choose based on gender or race or even, I mean, did he only target sentient beings or did he include mushrooms? And, well, that's assuming a mushroom isn't a sentient form of being. But did he include 50% of all potato bugs? I want to know. So, I dare say that humanitarianism and climatology are either at each other's necks, doing things in contravention of each other, in aggressive counteraction. The humanitarians want everybody to live fruitful, successful, healthy, happy lives. And the climatologists say we need to, by any means necessary, at any cost, this is an existential event. This is an existential climate collapse. This might mean an extinction event for not only our cuddly animal friends, but for huge amounts of you know, flora and fauna, as well as our own extinction in the near future of human beings. So you would assume that because within 12 years the world is going to be consumed by the fire of our own making, you'd assume that the climatologists would go en masse to kill, destroy, maim, and jail all the humanitarians of the world, right? To stop them from making sure that we all get our vaccines, that we all get our prenatal vitamins, that we all stop using PCBs, that we all stop consuming forever chemicals and forever plastics, that we all get our COVID vaccines, that we all make sure that we hydrate and that we eat protein and that we make sure that we get our fruits and vegetables and that we make sure that we get enough sleep and that we have enough to educate our children and empower our women. That is seems to be a little bit at odds. Oh, and the people who are pursuing the movement of people away from famine areas and deserts and so forth into more fertile and fecund areas in the north and the south. All these people are trying to keep alive people who, in a natural state of the earth, in a primitive state, in a liver king paleo state, wouldn't even have the opportunity to be third, fourth generation in their bloodline. They would have expired. Like I said, people like me on anti-AFib medicine, on cutting edge, like my heart failure would have killed me without modern sustenance, without modern sustainability, without cardiothoracic doctors, without modern medicine, without defib and cardioversion technologies, right? Everybody that you know who has rock star eyeglasses, everybody that you know who, people who have organ transplants would die tomorrow if supply lines for those anti-rejection meds didn't exist. So, right? So, we are, most Americans and most people around the world live in a state of temporary existence based on the fact that altruism, technology, and medicine keep us alive for decades and decades longer than we would have otherwise. With regards to transitioning boys and girls to become women and men, those are medicines that you have to take for the rest of your life. People who have type 1 diabetes would die almost immediately. Most people with type 2 diabetes would die. People without dialysis would die. People without their glasses would struggle to survive. People, it's endless, right? The number of people who are only alive based on the, like my, everybody with dialysis. So all I'm saying is that all we have to do, I guess, maybe if there's one nuclear exchange or one EMF explosion above the United States and our grid goes down, we know that everybody on dialysis is going to die. We know that if supply lines for sustainable, like Mitycosin or anybody else's, like medicines that keep them alive, it's just extremely fragile, right? And what I'm afraid of is I'm on team humanitarian, right? I'm on team humanitarianism. I believe that there's plenty of room for people, and I believe that technology innovates towards pain. I believe that technology solves pain. I believe that we live in a world that only has 8 billion people because of technology, innovation, altruism, medicine, science, and interventionism. I mean, if it weren't for the dastardly plots of most humanitarian and faith-based regimes, I don't know if we would get to the nooks and crannies, right? We always say that these nooks and crannies destroy unique First Nation cultures, First Village cultures, like people, you know, in the deepest, darkest Amazon and so forth. But those are also people who died at 35, right? You can maintain your utopia, but there's always a cost for maintaining your utopia and not engaging in the Borg, right? The Borg might remove all your individuality, but the Borg got your back, right? There's a t-shirt. Da Borg got your back. And the downside of DeBorg got your back is that DeBorg considers everything that's not healthy, pink flesh to be cancerous. So ideas are cancerous, cancers are cancerous, the Pope's cancerous because he's a different leader, Mormonism's cancerous because there's a different leadership. Judaism's always cancerous because they've always been their own tribe within a larger country. Islam is cancerous because there's always Mecca. Universities are cancerous because they're oftentimes, except in current history, they're generally heterodox. So, while you might live to being a healthy, fit, vigorous 120-year-old under the Borg, you'd better be a obedient Borg. You better be an obedient Borg that don't talk back. So you better be a contributing member to society. You better not be part of the gray or black market. You better not have a gun. You better not want a gun. And if you really insist on being into religion, you probably should be the religion of your overmasters. And that's what I always thought funny. This is a little bit of a divergence and a hint on the next conversation. Have you noticed that in a modern humanist world of atheists, that there is a huge amount of hatred towards Christianity? It's called, in many cases, Christofascism. That be whether that's, you know, any type of white church, so-and-so. But did you notice on this, at the same moment, African-American Christian church, Korean Christian church, certainly Latino, Latina, Latinx Christian church, Ethiopian Orthodox church, Lithuanian, any type of Orthodox church or anything that's adorbs or cute or charming or primitive or, you know, interesting or curious or que interesante are perfectly fine. Like, people consider, you know, Black Christian churches to be these beautiful, amazing, culturally important in the community thing. Whereas the same thing, if it were Baptist or Latin Catholic or whatever, those are considered awful, awful Trump pulpits that will result in Christo-fascist theocratic state. Doesn't make any sense to me. I believe that it's mostly a power thing, right? Because they really don't believe that anybody in a Black church, in a Latino church, in even a Muslim place, or even a Jewish temple, a Mormon temple? Mormon, I'm going to, I'm sorry. Assalamu alaikum. Clerics, temples. I'm sorry, complete brain fart. But anyway, people who don't have power can do their amusing, culturally unique, charming thing, and tourists will want to go and see how charming. That's why churches in Italy and Spain and anywhere but America, you can go to Catedral in Latin America, Spain, Portugal, Italy, and those are just charming relics of a different age. But, you know, St. Peter's Basilica might be considered to be a crypto-fascistic HQ. I don't know. Book recommendation is... I don't know. I don't have a book recommendation this week. I think I'm done. I think that I wonder how the humanists and how the climatists agree or disagree and what the end game is, because I do believe that the humanists do want to empower women to stop having kids. But the West can't even convince its own people, you know, to stop believing in a non-existent Christ figure, a non-existent God, a sky daddy. They can't even convince their rural peoples to not believe in sky daddy and to not have 10 kids and to not be anti-abortion. There's no way that they're going to be able to convince anybody outside of Kabul to do these things. Anybody outside of, you know, maybe Addis Ababa to do these kinds of things. And don't worry about Ethiopia, man. Those are very observant Eastern Orthodox Christian and Jewish people. They keep their knees closed, man. But you know, rural people everywhere, they don't have all that much to do. They're healthy. They don't care about being professionals. They don't care about their career. They just care about bringing home the bacon, and they care about loving their families, and they care about entertainment, and they care about fornication. And if I sound loopy, it's because I think I'm coming down with an ear infection. So it's annoying. It's annoying the bejesus out of me. Anyway, have a good day. I'll talk to you soon. Aloha and mahalo. This was episode 8, season 5. Talk to you soon. This is the Chris Abraham Show.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Abraham Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Until next time.